welcome to episode 1 of the Accessibility Craft Podcast, where we explore the art of creating accessible websites while trying out interesting craft beverages. This podcast is brought to you by the team at Equalize Digital, a WordPress accessibility company and the proud creators of the Accessibility Checker plugin. In this episode, you'll get to know the podcast co-hosts, Amber Hines, Chris Hines, and Steve Jones. You'll learn how we were introduced to accessibility and explore how we started building accessibility into everything that we do. For show notes and a full transcript, go to accessibilitycraft.com/001. And now, on to the show.
Hey, everybody. So I am Amber, and I'm here with Steve and Chris, my partners, but I think we're going to introduce ourselves since this is our first episode of the podcast. Steve, do you want to go first?
Sure. Steve Jones. I'm CTO of Equalize Digital, where I oversee the development of our products and services.
And I'm Chris Hines. I am the COO of Equalize Digital. I oversee all of our sales efforts, as well as all of the back-end processes that keep our company running, including HR and finance.
So if somebody is interested in working with us, you're the first person they talk to. So, and I am, of course, Amber. I said earlier, I'm the CEO at Equalize Digital, and I do lots of things, and I do a lot in the WordPress accessibility community. So this may be the first podcast episode, but you might have heard of me before if you have joined the WordPress Accessibility Meetup or attended WordPress Accessibility Day, which I helped to organize. So we are going to do something kind of fun. We're going to be talking about accessibility on this podcast, but we're also going to be talking about craft beverages of a wide variety, not always alcoholic. So Chris, do you want to tell us about our first one so we can open it and taste it and talk about it? Maybe also tell us why we're doing this drink. There's something that made you want to pick it.
We are trying a non-alcoholic spirit that is sugar-free. It's by a company called Seedlip, and we're trying their Grove 42 beverage. And if y'all want to start cracking open and pouring drinks, you can. So the way I'd recommend doing this, the way they recommend doing this is you're either going to mix it with soda water, ginger ale, or hot black tea, is three of their recommendations. And the reason that this one got my attention, I've actually, for people who don't know me, which is probably everybody listening to this for the most part, my background is in culinary arts originally. I say I'm a surviving former chef or recovering chef. So I've been aware of this company for a while, and they have supplied their non-alcoholic spirits to some very world-renowned, well-known restaurants across the globe. And this one is sort of their flagship or their most well-known, and it's the Grove 42. And this one, they say they have this infused with botanicals, including bitter orange, blood orange, lemongrass, lemon, mandarin, orange, and ginger. So I've always been curious about their stuff. I've never tried their stuff before, so we're getting a first impression here. They got their start in London, and they are now global. And yeah, just kind of excited to try this. I'm going into this with no impressions, but it definitely has a cool label.
Yeah, it looks like it's like a ginger root that's shaped like a rabbit face, kind of with a curve. I don't know. It is definitely cool, but hard to describe. I don't know. How would you describe it for someone who can't see this since they're listening and not watching?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a squirrel head, and then it has like an orange peel kind of looping behind it in a very stylistic way. And the citrus peels kind of look like a squirrel's tail, the way it kind of curves over at the top. I don't know, it's a very interesting artistic label, but I'm excited to try it.
So I will admit... So I opened it and I poured, but I'm like had to smell the bottle because when you were saying like orange and lemon and stuff, I was a little bit afraid that it was going to smell like furniture polish.
Yeah.
Like I was like, cause it's supposed to be diluted, right? Like mixed with something. So I was like, is it going to be really strong? Like I'm a little bit nervous.
Yeah. I mean, I would recommend, having never had this before, what I did is I kind of did like a 2-second pour, like a shot, and then I filled the rest of the way with soda water. And I think we've all got soda water today.
Yep. Yep. Soda water.
Yeah, so we did not do the ginger ale or the black tea.
Yeah. So about a shot's worth, mm-hmm. right?
I don't know if I put enough in. Maybe I gotta add more.
I mean, straight out of the bottle, to me, it has a...
Did you take a shot, Steve, right out of the bottle?
No, the smell straight out of the bottle has like a Sprite kind of smell to me.
Yeah, I totally get that.
It is kind of... It's been a very long time since I've had Sprite.
Right. It reminds me of being sick as a child.
All right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to taste it. Will you get mad if I drink out of this bottle?
Go ahead.
Since we're sharing.
Yeah.
Okay, it's way flatter of a flavor than I would have thought for something that you're mixing in. But maybe it's also because it's sugar-free.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
And I will totally admit that I'm not the sugar-free person in our house. And I instantly hear sugar-free and I think, oh, it must be gross.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned flat. Like that, I feel like it definitely complements this. Like having it with soda water definitely complements it. But it is very subtle. I would worry if I had it with a ginger ale or with a black tea, like they suggest. I mean, maybe I just diluted mine too much, but it definitely, I feel like it would get overpowered in that. Mm. Or even if you put like a twist of lime or a lemon in with it, I feel like I would lose the flavor.
I just don't think it's citrusy enough.
No, I think I'm going to go for two shots.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Steve's getting wild over here.
Yeah. But it's non-alcoholic, so I think we're all right.
Yeah.
Does it say anywhere
yeah.
on the bottle? Because I didn't read that. Like, how many servings are supposed to be in it?
Well, so it says serve 2 fluid ounces over ice. But it doesn't say, and it just says with ginger ale. But it doesn't say, like, what ratio. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't say how much ginger ale to do. Like, are we talking a highball glass or, like, a big glass? You know, or a martini? You know, mm-hmm. like, I don't know. I will say the first ingredient is water.
Yeah.
And it kind of just tastes like, I don't know. I feel like, you know, if we buy flavored soda water, like, flavored seltzer.
Yeah.
That has more flavor than me using our homemade seltzer that we made with our soda stream and then adding this. I don't think it's concentrated enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely went for a second shot and it still isn't quite sweet enough.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's no sugar in it. That's probably why.
Yeah.
I don't expect it to be sweet. I just kind of wish it had more of an orange. I don't know.
More of a kick. More of a kick. Mm-hmm. Citrus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, these are all going to be experiments. I don't know, you know, it'll be interesting to see what comes of it as we continue to mix it at home or try different things with it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm a little underwhelmed. I think
a lemon. I think a lemon slice would help kick it up a bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that would be good. So I do have to do a little shout out here because I don't know if anyone else is aware, but part of what inspired us to take this twist beyond Chris's accessibility, his culinary background, is also there is a podcast out there, if you haven't heard of it, called Whiskey Web and Whatnot, and they always talk about a whiskey. Obviously, we're not just going to do whiskey. We're going to be kind of all over, but I enjoyed that podcast, so I have to give them a shout out and a little nod to them because the idea of talking web and a drink was definitely inspired a little bit by them as well. So,
yeah.
So I thought since it's our first episode, it would be good for us to just sort of talk about some of our bigger goals for the podcast, what people can expect when they tune in next time or in future episodes. So I know we're definitely talking about, I think we're hoping to create something that's interesting for agency owners, designers, developers, content creators, not just WordPress, I don't think we're going to talk. I think we're generally accessibility in the web broadly. So we might talk about some web accessibility news. I do know that we're going to share some recordings from the meetup. So, the accessibility meetup. So there'll be some of that, but even that's not 100% WordPress focused. I think we might get technical at times. So I don't know how you'll feel about that, Chris, but I know Steve and I might dive into some code conversations.
I'll probably be very quiet during those parts of the podcast episodes.
Yeah. Well, you can always make sure that we're not going too much in the weeds, maybe.
Kind of pull us back a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think a good place to start that might be interesting for people is talking about how we got into accessibility, which I know I've talked about a little bit. So I'm sort of interested to hear you all's perspective on how did the three of us, we've been working together for a while, how do you describe our journey into discovering accessibility?
Yeah, sure. You want me to go first?
I have this conversation a lot because a lot of agency owners and developers and designers that I talk to on a daily basis, just through sales conversations, they often ask how we got into this and why we built the tool and all of those things. And what I will typically tell them is that it just sort of happened. And what I mean by that is we started, it's like you get one client where this is a priority, right? And I believe for us, Amber, that was Colorado State University when we landed them as a client in our old agency days. And suddenly we found ourselves needing to learn this, much like a lot of agency owners and a lot of developers are doing right now. They're having to start to learn this. They're becoming more aware of it. We went through that exact same process, but we did it, you know, 6 years ago, 7 years ago. And that project kind of led to more projects and more projects. And increasingly, I can only speak for myself personally, although I think we all maybe share this perspective a little bit, is I just gain more and more of an appreciation for the importance of accessibility over time. And that it didn't necessarily have to be exceedingly difficult or this barrier on projects that made projects run slower or get more expensive. And I think as we got more experienced with it, we learned how to just work it into everything we do just as a reflex and as second nature. And that's kind of been the journey up until this point, until we started building tools around it and started doing more intentional branding and marketing around it.
Yeah, so my kind of journey in accessibility started kind of back in my freelance days, where I did a lot of work for retirement communities. So I do a lot of websites for retirement communities, and it would be a thing that would come up, right? It wasn't necessarily like always a project requirement, but clients were always kind of mentioning it.
Were they using the word accessibility, or were they like asking just make it easier for people who are older? Like, they were using the word accessibility even?
Yeah, I mean, I think both, right? They would mention that the website needs to be usable by an older audience, but they would actually use the word accessibility at times as well. But it was much more casual in those days, right? And so accessibility had always kind of been like a little thing that would come up from time to time in those days.
And what are we talking about when we say in those days, Steve? Time frame. Well,
I don't want to date myself. But,
I don't think it was that long ago, was it?
No. No, I mean, really, we could go far back where, in the web before CSS. Yes, I'm that old. The websites were actually much more accessible because they were, you know, just built with semantic HTML.
But, yeah. So around what year-ish did you start hearing about it from clients?
2010 and forward, probably. It became much more of a topic that would come up from time to time. But then, with our company, I think, I would echo a little bit of what Chris said. Definitely with some universities that we took on, it became a requirement. And And then we took on a very large project for a government agency in Texas, and it was a huge requirement. So that really required us to go through the site thoroughly, make sure that it's usable by a mouse and a keyboard. We did user testing.
That was the first project we ever brought in and paid people who were blind, multiple people who were blind, to test the website, because it was for people to be able to get government benefits. And it's like, if everyone can't do it, then obviously the website would be a fail.
Right, exactly. And so that was definitely kind of, I think that was a big turning point for us, where it became kind of very front of mind for us. And then I think over time that led to the, you know, our plugin that we have, the accessibility checker. And, you know, when I was building that out in 2020, having to build a tool that checks for accessibility definitely tests your skills and your knowledge on getting it right. So that was the major dive down the wormhole of accessibility, building that plugin.
Yeah, so that for me, I think, was really pivotal too, and like expanding my knowledge, because I remember sitting with you initially and just saying, what are some of the rules we should have? And so we, you know, like we looked at Wave, we looked at some of the other tools that were out there to see like what are they checking for? And then, but you know, they're not all open source. So then we're like sitting here being like, okay, if we want to check for this, what do we need to do? And we've refined it. Like I think an update you did sort of recently, we've been from the beginning checking if headings are in the right order, but we were only using the heading tags. And I know you did something to check for like heading roles, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Adding in the ARIA spec, you know, check for that as well, if it has the ARIA label for a heading.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, and accessibility is a process. Like our plugin evolves as our knowledge evolves, and as the community, you know, helps us refine the product as well.
Yeah, but really, I think for me on the learning front, and with that, you know, we spent so much time just going through the web content accessibility guidelines, and each one being like, can we possibly devise an HTML check for this? But spending time reading each one, thinking about what does it literally mean, because sometimes the explanation of that rule is not explicit. Like even the first one, non-text content, well, that could apply to a lot of things. Images missing alt text, buttons that are empty, like just tons of, and it's like, okay, well, we could have five of our checks that only apply to this one WCAG rule.
Right. Yeah, and we've even taken rules and kind of split them into multiple rules to make it more easily definable to the end user, to remove some of the confusion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think this is something that people have asked me a lot, like at Meetup, different, you know, what's the best way to learn? And obviously what we've sort of been talking about is how we learn by doing.
That is the best way to learn it, 100%, is to just get in there and do it, and do the work and learn as you go. Because I don't know, maybe this is a dangerous suggestion in some scenarios. Like if you're you should have no business running a major federal agency website if you know nothing about accessibility. We would assume that those people do, but for the average person managing a website, if you go in there and you try to make some accessibility fixes, odds are if you're careful and you're diligent, you're going to make your website more usable. Even if it's just fixing alternative text on images or just correcting your heading orders, just some basic content related accessibility fixes, you are going to improve it.
This episode of Accessibility Craft is sponsored by Equalize Digital Accessibility Checker, the WordPress plugin that helps you find accessibility problems before you hit publish. A WordPress native tool, Accessibility Checker provides reports directly on the post edit screen, Reports are comprehensive enough for an accessibility professional or developer, but easy enough for a content creator to understand. Accessibility Checker is an ideal tool to audit existing WordPress websites, find accessibility problems during new builds, or monitor accessibility and remind content creators of accessibility best practices on an ongoing basis. Scans run on your server, so there are no per-page fees or external API connections. GDPR and privacy compliant, real-time accessibility scanning. Scan unlimited posts and pages with Accessibility Checker free. Upgrade to a paid version of Accessibility Checker to scan custom post types and password-protected sites. View site-wide open issue reports and more. Download Accessibility Checker free today at equalizedigital.com/accessibility-checker. Use coupon code accessibilitycraft to save 10% on any paid plan.
Yeah. I think too, you know, you don't necessarily have to jump in and do it for clients right away. I mean, we did. I think we did it unexpectedly with the CSU, because that was actually on the second website. I mean, we vaguely knew, and we were trying to do some best practices on the first one. And then the second website we built for them, they're like, oh, hey, we have this accessibility committee on campus now, and they're going to review everything you do before it can launch. And we're like, oh,
yeah,
that's a surprise. But I think, like, you could start doing some things on your own website as a learning experience. And I think the biggest thing too, if you're learning by doing, is finding resources for feedback, right? Like, can you hire someone or find someone who's already in your audience that uses a screen reader every day who can come through and give you feedback? I think that was a huge turning point for me, both in me really realizing how important this is and also just changing my mindset about how I looked at certain things, because there are items, like, I remember on that first testing session, we tested a website that had an event calendar, and this whole conversation came up with some of the users about the grid view on a calendar that's like a standard grid view, which there weren't literal WCAG failures. So it wasn't literally an accessibility problem, but it just wasn't usable in comparison to a list view where they could just go and be like, here are the two events that are coming up this month, as opposed to having to go through every single square on the calendar and hear, is there an event here or is there not? No. Okay. Go to the next day. Right.
Right.
But I feel like getting that feedback and hearing, like, seeing what they were experiencing was a huge learning thing. And so that's where, if you want to learn by doing, you can, but you got to make sure that you're getting feedback. We're using, like, automated tools like our accessibility checker. I know people have said they like it because it helps them learn how to, you know, be better.
I've even described it to people that way, that it's not just a plugin that checks for accessibility issues. It's a plugin that aids in the education of accessibility.
Yeah, and that's a goal we have for sure. Yeah. So what were some of the biggest accessibility challenges that we've had on some of those first projects?
Development-wise?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be very quiet in this segment, I can already tell, because I just sell the things, and then you guys have the headache of figuring out how to implement them. So this segment's going to be all you two.
I mean, for a while, Chris, you were doing a little bit of our project management. We went back to me doing all the project management. But, I mean, I think there are challenges that still come up sometimes with conversations around brand and color palette and having to, like, convince clients, like, that color contrast matters. And that is probably, like, it's so easy to me, and I feel like it's the obvious thing you can test for, and yet somehow I feel like on many projects it is one of the biggest hurdles we have to get over with clients, which is a challenge in and of itself.
because it could be a modification to their brand guidelines, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about on the dev side? Like,
yeah, the dev side could be quite a few things. I mean, like, at the very first, I mean, like in the early days when I was talking, like in the mid 2000s, 2010, I mean, I was basically trying to, you know, use buttons correctly and links correctly, you know, but then when it moved into like using the actual screen reader, like I'm on a Mac, so I use VoiceOver. So that was like a challenge for me at first, just like if you've ever turned on a screen reader at first and it starts speaking to you a whole bunch of things, it's
overwhelming.
It's definitely overwhelming and it takes a little bit of getting used to. And it's also like opened your eyes to what, you know, a blind person would be experiencing. So that was definitely like a challenge at first. And then, you know, just the learning of the spec, the area spec, and learning of all the rules, it can be kind of overwhelming. It's not that these things, from a development standpoint, I don't think that accessibility is difficult, but there's just a lot of rules that you have to learn. And
attention to detail that you maybe don't have to have, especially in a WordPress development environment where you could just be like, oh, I'll just grab a plugin for that.
Right.
And then you're like, oh, dang.
Yeah. Yeah.
This plugin is loaded with problems. No, I just have to code it myself.
Well, it changes your mentality, your dev process, too. Like when, you know, when you're given a task to make this landing page or make this web page, right? Like you're thinking, I just need to code it out, make sure that it's, you know, responsive, that it works with my mouse, and that everything hovers the way it's supposed to hover. And now you have this whole subset. Well, it also needs to work with the keyboard. It needs to work with the tab key, with the escape key, with the space bar. So, so when you bring those things front of mind, right? Like, I think there's a struggle within a developer to say, well, this is what I have to accomplish. But now you're telling me I've got to do all this accessibility stuff. It's like, okay, well, I'll do it and then I'll go do the accessibility stuff. But if you reorient your thinking and your dev process to put those things, you know, you're going to do those accessibility things at the same time as you're developing. And you kind of tell yourself, this is no longer like, oh, this thing I have to do at the end of the project, right? No, this is something that's going to be integral to my process that I'm going to do as I work. And I mean, specifically, some of the things that I found most challenging with accessibility, you know, when you get past some of the, you know, putting alt text on images, right, is some very specific things like navigation.
Oh, like creating a good navigation menu.
Yeah, creating accessible navigation. Now, we've had a lot of conversation about navigation, Amber and I, but a navigation can be compliant, right, but maybe not built the best way possible, right? Mm-hmm. So skipping through the main, you know, the main links in a navigation, not going through all the not requiring them to go through all the sub menus on every parent menu item. So things like that. Some other things that I found very challenging were modals, locking focus on a modal, once a modal is closed, returning focus to where you left off.
I think you're listing out things that we're going to have to make you talk about at WordPress Accessibility Meetup.
There you go. Exactly.
He's giving us our future talk list right now.
Yeah.
How do you do this?
Yeah, right. Exactly. And then some other things, you know, just like tabs, tooltips, things that are, I would probably call a little more advanced accessibility items. So those are some of the things that I found challenging, and to some degree I still find challenging.
Yeah. I think one thing too, which we don't have as much of a problem with now because we're accessibility and people know that and that's why they come to us. But I think you could probably speak to this a little bit. In the early days, we were trying to sell accessibility as an add-on. And so I don't know if you had challenges ever, like And there, you probably did, because there were clients who didn't always go for that. Like, they weren't willing to pay for extra user testing, or they weren't, you know, they were like, no, I don't have the budget for a fully custom website, so I just want to use this template or theme, sure. Right? That I found on the internet.
I think that is down to mindset and positioning as an agency, and only the sales lead or the agency owner is really going to be able to decide this. But I think we made the very intentional decision that accessibility was no longer an option. And I don't remember the exact date that we put a pin in that, but I remember that we did. And ever since then, it became a lot easier, because it wasn't even really talked about or presented in a way that was like, this is an option or an add-on. Instead, it was just like, this is how we do things, right? And that's just how it was approached. And I think that alone, you know, if someone, I think the only, at that point, the only reason that someone wouldn't go for it is if they don't consider you an expert, at which point you don't want to work with them anyway. But anyone coming to us generally is considering us an expert on some level, because they're entertaining the idea of paying us a lot of money, either for accessibility directly or for a new custom website. And so that positioning, that expertise is already there, thanks in large part to the quality of our work that we deliver, Steve, and the marketing and the public face that we put out there. Amber, like, you both have done a fantastic job proving what I say in sales calls, which makes my conversations a whole hell of a lot easier, right?
You're welcome.
But I think that's really what it comes down to, is it's no longer an option. This is what you're doing because it's in your best interest. It's much like if you go to a doctor, right? And the doctor is telling you what you need. And there are people who are going to walk away and not believe someone with a medical degree and way more medical education than they have. And then there are people who are going to listen to their doctor, right? So we definitely have a preference of which person we want to work with.
I'm sure the doctors do too.
Yes, I'm sure they do. I'm sure the doctors prefer not to work with people who trust Google MD more than the physician standing right in front of them, right?
Yeah.
What, you don't trust Google MD?
Oh man, we Google MD stuff all the time.
I know. I've got all kinds of diagnoses from Google MD.
From the internet.
Okay. Yeah, anytime I look up a symptom for anything on Google, I learn that I have some rare form of cancer and I have 3 months to live. That's pretty much everything I look up on Google.
That's right.
Where I'm like, I have this weird pain, you know, or something. Fortunately, I don't know. Maybe that's the same level of fear they're experiencing with accessibility if they know nothing about it and they're looking up stuff. Interesting.
Right.
Thought.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. That maybe that motivates you to live your best life.
Yes.
I'll live there 3 months. I got to get everything I can get in.
YOLO.
So I'm going to throw you guys a little bit of a curveball here. Something that wasn't on our show notes, but okay. I thought of it as Chris was talking. So I do think that yes, there is a point where you just decide, like, this is important, right? Like, mobile. In the very beginning, we charged people extra for mobile responsive websites. And then we just said, no, it has to be mobile responsive. We're not going to charge you extra, right? What do you think that line is for accessibility? Like, obviously, we've made that decision. But, like, where do you think that is for all websites or the vast majority, because there are still some websites that get launched that are not mobile responsive or are very poor mobile responsive, right? Like, is that on the developers? Is that on the agencies, the people who make the templates, and what's going to motivate that to actually happen everywhere?
I mean, from the tech side, I would say that, like, with mobile responsive, I think the thing that really pushed that over the threshold to not being, like, an option anymore is definitely the big players requiring it, right? So they're not going to index or promote your rankings if your site is not mobile responsive. So I think, like, if big players like Google, and they may have already, I don't know. I'm a developer, I'm not an SEO guy, but if Google starts, not ranking inaccessible websites, and I think that that'll be a wake up call for a lot. Yeah. As far as who's responsible, I mean, ultimately, like, I think the person that owns the website's legally responsible. You know, consult your lawyer. I'm not a lawyer, I think that the owner of the website is ultimately responsible for the accessibility of their website, right? But I think us as industry leaders, we have a responsibility as well to promote accessibility. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a big hurdle or challenge in the industry as a whole, is that a lot of people haven't even heard of it. Like, I even go, you know, we were at a wedding for Chris's brother this summer, telling people what we do, and they're like, what? I don't know. Yeah. Like, you build wheelchair ramps for websites? Like, I don't get it, right? Like, they had no idea. I mean, once you start explaining, right? Like, you're like captions on videos for people who are deaf or hard of hearing. They go, oh, like, but it's like stuff that people don't really realize, right?
Right.
Unless you personally are connected to it. And I think that's a challenge overall to web accessibility. So, I mean, I don't know, on the Google front, Lighthouse does check a little bit of accessibility. There is a lot of accessibility overlap with SEO, and I think that I have a plan for us to talk about that. So I don't know if we need to go down that road right now, but future episode, everyone, please subscribe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, maybe even Chris could speak of this a little bit. Like, I think, you know, we've seen this, that maybe there's not necessarily always a monetary gain from being accessible, but there is government regulation, you know, there is litigation that happens as a result of accessibility that could be, that could affect a company financially. Mm-hmm. And
I think you have to think a little bit about accessibility in terms of there is definitely a subtle gain that can happen in terms of SEO, in terms of conversions, and in terms of just your website being more usable and more easy to digest in terms of information. If we're talking about a website that is fully accessible versus one that has a lot of accessibility problems, it is pretty clear that one of them is going to perform better than the other, just fundamentally. And there's a lot of data that shows that. I think that the thing that I have been talking to people about a lot and thinking in terms of like what we're doing in terms of having the free tool, having education there, having distribution of Accessibility Checker, and trying to work within WordPress channels to raise the level of accessibility overall, is I think that accessibility increasingly is going to have to be a bottom-up problem and not a top-down problem. It has to be the community itself advocating for accessibility and bringing up things, right? So one small example I can think of somewhat recently is someone reached out to me and said, you know, like, hey, I'm finding all of these issues that Accessibility Checker is flagging in the header and footer of my template that I bought for WordPress. And I'm like, hey, why don't you go raise those issues with that theme developer or that template developer and see if they'll release a patch? And lo and behold, they did. And suddenly, the outcome of that, because that person took a minute to do some advocacy, is now, you know, several thousand WordPress websites just got patched to make their navigations more accessible. So just by writing that message, just by making this a bottom-up problem and doing that little bit of work, it's going to ultimately make the web more accessible. I mean, I think that that's really where I approach it from. And it's, you know, the ROI has to be a conversation component for businesses, especially. But then it's very easy. It's very, very easy to just tie it to conversions, tie it to SEO, tie it to those things that those business already has goals and KPIs they're trying to meet around those things. And just make sure that they understand, you know, if you're an agency trying to sell this or talk to a business about it, that accessibility is an avenue to get them where they want to go relative to those types of digital objectives.
Yeah, I wish there were more good case studies. I keep looking. I think the thing that's hard, and I've had moments when I was like, you know, can we try and put one together? But what is most challenging on that front, at least with the work we do, is that we're typically either we're in one or two buckets. One is we're just doing a complete website rebuild because the other one was, you know, outdated. It didn't look good. It wasn't accessible. It maybe didn't have good SEO or whatever, right? So it's like there's so many variables. It's hard to say that everything improved. And we frequently, we launch, we look back and it's like, wow, they're doing way better in search. But it could have been because of the accessibility fixes. It could have been because they rewrote all of their, or they added more pages, or they actually figured out a better blogging strategy, right? Or the HTML structure was better, right? Or we're doing remediations on existing sites. And what is challenging about that is it happens over time. It's not like one point in time. And so it's harder to be like, our business got better because of accessibility when you're not doing like a massive, and maybe there are businesses that do this where they're doing a big massive accessibility release and, right, and they can pin it. But typically what we're doing is it's like incremental things over time to fit in people's budgets. So I don't know, that makes it more challenging.
Yeah.
But
I mean, accessibility touches so many areas. Right. And that's the other thing that I think makes it challenging for a very focused case study around conversions or SEO or anything else, is because its implications are so far reaching and it touches every part of a website user experience, every part of technical best practices. I think that it just makes it hard.
Yeah, totally.
So do you feel like, of course, I'm sure I know the answer to this, but despite some of those first challenges we had and even some of the things we still have now, I think we all feel like it's worth it to have gone on this accessibility journey and to be on it. But I'm curious, maybe as our last thoughts, could share like what is the most meaningful to you about this journey, or, you know, if you're trying to inspire somebody else to start making accessibility part of like central to what their agency does, like, why do you think that? You know, what are the biggest benefits on that?
Right. I mean, for me, you know, so I'm taking this from a developer standpoint, and, you know, and maybe hopefully I can capture the sentiment of other developers out there. And, you know, being completely honest, I think at first, having accessibility requirements added to a project can be a little maybe frustrating, right? Because it's in addition to just trying to get the project done. But I think as time goes on, and I think as we went through the process of creating our own accessibility plugin that checks for accessibility, and we start to have user testers, you know, like blind. I get to see blind user testers using websites I've created, using a plugin that I've created. It when you see that, it really changes your mind. You're like, it makes it tangible that these are real people, and these people matter just as much as anybody. And you start to learn that accessibility first is you could just replace the word accessibility with people. You're putting people first. And when you look at it from that standpoint, that if I write code that is inaccessible, I'm blocking these people out from being able to use this application or this website that I'm making. And from a business standpoint, if I'm a business owner and I'm making a website that's inaccessible to a subset of the population, I could be losing revenue as well, right? If they're not able to complete a purchase on my website. So I think ultimately for me, I think over time, that I really came to learn that accessibility first is people first.
Yeah. Man,
that's beautiful.
Maybe that needs to be our teaser clip at the beginning. Because, yeah, when I think about what's meaningful to me, it really has been that, like being able to see real people. And I think that's something that helped me, like keeping in mind, like, I, you know, we had a young man, Devin, who was testing for us for a while. And I would always like think of Devin and I would be like, I want Devin to be able to use this thing. Right.
Right.
And I think, yeah, it is definitely a people first experience. What about you, Chris? Is there something that you found really impactful or meaningful to you in this journey so far?
I think certainly what you both have shared. I feel the same way about the importance of helping people. I think for me, because of my sort of business mindset, right? Like from the business angle, I think what I have found particularly meaningful about shifting into this is that it makes us more focused on where and how we can create impact and how we can make a difference for the people that we work with. And I feel like our business trajectory, the marketing and promotion we do, the sales conversation we have, just the level of laser-like focus that we have on accessibility and achieving that outcome has made all of us far better and far more successful professionals. So that's number one. Number two, I think that we haven't really limited ourselves by niching into this because accessibility is so far reaching and it touches so many things that if it is digital, accessibility is going to be a component of it. And so we have focused, but we have not limited our potential as an organization. And I think that that's something that a lot of agency owners and a lot of just freelancers out there can think about is that this is something that if you can develop some expertise and some capabilities in this area, you can easily just position yourself better as a professional and you can deliver better work, which means you can charge more, which means you can create better outcomes and last longer as a business and be more sustainable. So, I mean, just everything you said, but also on the business side too, I feel like it is one of the best decisions that we have collectively ever made. Enough said.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. I think we're about out of time for today's show. Chris is going to come back in just a second with official sign off, but I thought it might be good to just tease next week, or our next release, which should be coming out next Monday. And that will be talking more about what Steve started to talk about building an accessibility first mindset. And you'll have to tune in to find out what we'll be drinking.
Mm. All right. Thanks for listening to Accessibility Craft. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe in your podcast app to get notified when future episodes release. You can find Accessibility Craft on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And if building accessibility awareness is important to you, please consider rating Accessibility Craft 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Accessibility Craft is produced by Equalize Digital and hosted by Amber Hines, Chris Hines, and Steve Jones. Steve Jones composed our theme music. Learn how we help make thousands of WordPress websites more accessible at equalizedigital.com.